everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in? This is The Run-Through. I'm Chloe Mal.
And I'm Cho Minardi.
And the new issue of American Vogue is out, and the cover is the iconic Miuccia Prada. Everyone is obsessed with this cover.
Me too.
We love her. But the entire issue is dedicated to female designers who we love and who we want to wear and who we wanted to interview. So we got to hear from some of these women on the podcast during our new version of Shark Week.
Yeah, and this one is a really good one. It happens to be a good friend of mine, Martine Rose, exceptional designer.
Choma, I loved hearing you and Martine chat. I did not know that much about her, and I feel like I learned about both of you, including your club kid days. You're both British. You both grew up going to the same nightclubs. It was sort of a lesson in club scene late 90s, early aughts, Chominati.
I definitely had so many flashbacks to my teenage years.
Tell me a little bit about sort of her background on her as a designer.
She just won Menswear Designer of the Year at the British Fashion Awards. So it was kind of a big year for her. She started her menswear label in 2007. And I would say they were very much influenced by the club scene, and but she sort of straddles the line between tailoring and sportswear, and there are all these fun, irreverent references and especially British witticisms to her clothes.
Britwit.
You know, that I think people really appreciate and that I really appreciate. I think a lot of people came to know who she was when she became a consultant for Demna, who's the creative director of Balenciaga, and she consulted on the menswear collection. I think it was a really pivotal moment for her because her business was having some ups and downs.
I'm fascinated to hear all this background because I have to be honest, for me, what I think of immediately with Martine is those iconic Nikes that she designed that the entire Vogue office likes to wear on casual Fridays or any day of the week, really. Will you tell us about those?
They're the Nike Shock Mules and they're square toe. She's known for making these insane square toe loafers. That was one of her first kind of breakout accessories, I would say. So she designed these mules and they just became this best-selling hit for Nike. And she's collaborated with Nike. And obviously it's a natural fit for her because of all the sports references in her clothing. And then since then, she's collaborated with the likes of Kendrick Lamar, you know, and did all the merch for the Hillbilly song and performances. So she's been a name that, especially menswear, because that's her specialty. Like menswear obsessives have always known and loved.
And I feel like you guys were dinner partners at the British Fashion Awards, right?
Yeah, we were. And I was so surprised to know that she didn't know she was going to win because she seemed so relaxed. But she just said it was because she'd had quite a few drinks. I think she'd had a couple of tequila shots.
And take the edge off.
Quite relaxed. The last time I saw you was at the British Fashion Awards and you got that amazing British Menswear Designer Award, long overdue. And it was my first award. So I felt like, and I was sitting at your table and I was like, wow, I'm so glad I'm here to see this moment.
That's so sweet. I know. I was pretty drunk. I had to drink.
You did it. Your speech was, it was so good.
Unplanned.
Really? Unplanned?
Come on, Choma. Completely unplanned. I didn't know.
Oh, I thought you knew.
No.
You were so nonchalant. You just walked up as if it was like, I'm just going to pick up my award.
12 tequilas deep. I was not nonchalant. I can't believe I couldn't even see the stage. I mean, I can't believe I made it to the stage. It was really fun, actually, that night.
But I know. I think we have to sort of backtrack to the beginning.
Yeah.
To, you know, how you got into fashion. And for people who don't know, like, mm-hmm. I know you were inspired by the club scene, and actually in doing the research, I learned that we both went to the same club night.
No way.
Yeah, I used to go to Twice as Nice. Did you go to Twice as Nice?
Oh my God, yeah, Twice as Nice, yes.
I remember Mixmag, which was like a
Mix club. Mag was my thing. That was the only...
We were photographed, me and my friends, in Mixmag at Twice as Nice.
Oh, really? I mean, that's very cool.
It's a different time.
You just forget how spoiled we were. Monday night, you know.
Every night of the week.
This is it. Joels Peterson, Bar Rumba, plus 12 other
clubs. Oh my God, Bar Rumba.
Yeah. Tuesday, it was just relentless. Tuesday night, 4 or 5 really good club nights to go to every single night of the week. And I was like, wow, it's amazing. That massively informed everything.
Wow, was it true that you went to your first club at 13? You beat me. I think my first was 16.
I had my 14th birthday in Strawberry Sundays in Vauxhall.
Wow.
Which is wild. I can't even believe that now, having a daughter that will be there in, you know, not very long.
Yeah, describe the scene for people who maybe, you know, beyond our little microcosm of fun.
Well, I mean, I was a 14-year-old. It was an illegal club because it was around the back of Vauxhall at that time, once they got their license. It was so informative. You know, it's the first time that I was really, really saw people really be themselves, because it was like techno, hardcore, drum and bass.
How were you dressing for the club? Like,
well, Kensington Market, and just lots of independent designers. And I'd nick all my sister's clothes. She had really good stuff. She had really, really good
what
stuff.
What were some of the, what were the price things that you nicked? Do you remember?
I mean, always the Gaultier.
Oh, that's a good one. I only got like thrifted like junior Gaultier one bit at a time.
So she's 15 years older than me, my sister.
So she had the right.
She really set the bar. So I used to just sit on the bed and watch her get dressed and just be like, I want, you know, access to this world. She used to wear Helen Story. She used to wear Catherine Hamnett.
Yeah.
So much stuff. And I just a lot of subculture stuff, which was like very sort of like stretchy lycra, you know, stuff. And so I used to nick that.
It's so fun. Was she annoyed?
No. Well, she annoyed when I lost it, which I inevitably did a lot. I would have killed me, seriously. Well, and that was it. Like, it wasn't fashion. It was there, never fashion.
Yeah.
I was into clothes. I was into like style, individual style. I was into what people were wearing for what purpose, where they were going, what the codes meant, and still am. And that hasn't changed.
At what point were you like, oh, I love all this and I want to make this into something?
Late. I thought I wanted to do sculpture, honestly, because I liked form, you know, I liked sort of like making form, and I liked weird shapes and all of that sort of stuff. And I was like, maybe it's sculpture. Then I did textiles. And something clicked. I thought, oh, yeah, no, maybe it is clothes. I'd love clothes. Maybe it is clothes. And I was a bit ambivalent about it for a really long time, because I was always working in clubs and bars as well, which I loved it.
And how did you land on menswear? I mean, you were sort of the first in a wave of women designing menswear, although I think...
There's more.
There's much more. It's not like you're designing for people.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think menswear I was always attracted to because it just appealed to my own personal style a little bit more, probably. I mean, I think I didn't think about it at the time, but when I reflect on it, because I get asked it a lot, I think maybe I just felt more comfortable with it. I'm not really like a sort of frocky, sort of like girly girl. And I also really enjoy the rules of menswear.
Yeah.
You know, like that there are so many rules with women's, you can do whatever you want, and that's actually too much. There's nothing to push against in a way. Do you see what I mean? There's no rules to break. But with men's, I found it way more exciting to be like, to have less stuff to push against, like all of these codes and like do's and don'ts in menswear. And I enjoy that.
It feels like there's much more subversion now, like since, I mean, how have you seen it change? Like, it feels like so much, all of those things to push against now have
moved. Yeah, they definitely have. Oh yeah, no, back then it was like, even, you know, using a pink, do you know what I mean?
Oh, and my god, it's like,
you're like, whoa. The landscape of menswear has obviously changed, and that's a good thing, you know, that is a good thing.
I've been thinking a lot about like British style and what informs it, and I think a lot of the same things that You know, maybe that's why I have so many of your pieces, is that some of the things that informed my sense of British style informed yours, you know, like football culture, you know, dance music. Because football culture was, I think it's probably similar to you. Like, it wasn't something that I'm not a football fan. But the sort of culture of football is really interesting to me. And there's also that sense of boundary pushing and class and, you know.
Totally, exactly. That, I mean, people think that I'm like a football fanatic, and I often have to like really gently let them down. I'm like, not at all. I do not know the offside rule. I know nothing about football. But the culture around football, particularly in England, is so compelling. Like,
yeah, amazing. It's inescapable, actually. It's inescapable.
Particularly if you're growing up in the 80s in London, yeah. Like it was like palpable.
Yeah.
And this is why I always put football shirts in my collection, was because when I was growing up, we saw someone in a football shirt, we were told to cross the road unequivocally. Like,
oh my God. And Chelsea, I mean, there were certain teams, yeah, like hooligans and like, yeah. And certain Millwall, like.
Exactly. All yeah. of it. Do you know what? Just cross the road, just avoid. And then there was a point when in the summer of 1989, which was the second summer of love here in London, when house music, dance music and ecstasy basically took over.
Yeah.
And I was nine, but there was a big park near my nan's house. And my cousin used to go out to Rain Dance or Camden Palais the night before. And all the kids used to converge on this one park, Clapham Common, because they didn't want to go home. Obviously, they were still buzzing from the night before, so they'd be like sprawled out, but they would be like playing music. So it became like an unofficial wow. after party. But I mean, thousands of kids. But I was like, this is something I knew how powerful it was. Even then, I could sense it at that age. But I saw men with football tops who had previously been told to cross the road, dancing with rusters, dancing with crusties, dancing with skinheads, dancing with thingy. And literally football culture, football hooliganism died overnight because they were now dropping E's together on the dance floor on a Saturday. There was like the aggression had found another way out.
Yeah.
I knew that they were talking badly about it on the news, and therefore that was the team I wanted to be on. You know what I mean?
The fire starters.
The Run Through will be right back after this break.
Get balanced or thrive trying. My name is Les, and I'm the host of Balanced Black Girl, a podcast dedicated to helping you feel your best. Join me for casual conversations about what it means to live a well-rounded life. I cover everything from how to make friends as an adult, to how to create a workout routine that works for you, to how to practice better financial wellness. Tune in for approachable conversations with wellness thought leaders and inspiring guests, as well as intimate solo chats with me for relatable advice. Follow wherever you get your podcasts and look out for new episodes every Tuesday.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
So you started your brand in 2007.
Yeah.
When did you start working with Demna?
2016.
Were you evicted from your home? No.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
He got in contact with me. I'd had Valentine's, she was like 3 months old. He got evicted, rehoused. But it was just like a low point. Oh. Just a low point. I was still sort of like teaching. And I was like, oh my God, maybe I just need to like stop all this.
Yeah, because it's hard. I mean, it's hard to keep a business going. Always like,
I was supposed to be responsible now.
Right. So motherhood sort of put a different, I mean, it does.
A little bit. You know what I mean? A little bit. I think I was just like, I know I'm supposed to do the responsible thing, and probably the responsible thing now is not, you know, is not carrying on with this really expensive thing that, you know, and I'm getting evicted from my house. Oh, you know, maybe, just a thought, maybe I'm going to have to give this up. I found a diary the other day that literally just spanned the 6 months from getting evicted to starting at Balenciaga.
Wow.
And I'm just like, I don't know if I can do it. I, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm not, can I do luxury? You know, it's my first job I've ever had.
Wow.
I was also aware of the trust that Demna had put in me. And I didn't even know if I trusted myself that much. You know what I mean? Because it was a risk. We'd met a couple of times before we really got on. So we knew that we really liked each other. But for me to actually deliver something, you know, sort of was another thing, you know.
What was it like working with Demna?
Really, really fun. We had much fun. It was so great.
And he has a real sense of humour.
Brilliant sense of humour. Really funny person. Like, we got on incredibly well, even though we came from so far apart, like completely different backgrounds and stuff. There were so many things that we found in common.
Mm.
And it was really based on that, I think. You know, we really just connected. And so everything else was really easy. Nothing felt particularly labored. I've never had a job before, so I was making it up as I went along. I didn't really know how the professionals did it, as it were. Do you know what I mean? No idea. I was just making it up myself in my little studio in London. So that was just a little sort of like peek behind the curtain, like, sort of the same, just a bit more together.
I mean, now you're a boss lady, you've got employees. Multiple.
Yeah, well.
How do you maintain kind of work-life balance? How do you sort of like feed all the aspects of your life?
I'm not that flexible about it, to be honest. And not in a, you know what I mean? I didn't have a family not to not have a family.
So
that was a very sort of clear thing. And I think that ambivalence, in a way that I've always had, about the industry itself still is there. Mm. I just don't buy all of it. Do you know what I mean? Don't buy into it. And there's so much that I just don't subscribe to. And there's so many people in fashion, don't get me wrong, that are the most exciting, brilliant, you know, funny, wonderful. I've met the best people, you know what I mean? But they're sort of individuals. But as a sort of unit, as an institution, I just don't buy it all.
One item specifically that I think everyone in the office like has, loves, are the Nike
shop.
Like, I knew you talk were gonna... about like,
I mean, it's that same thing about what I like about menswear was the rules. And it's sort of the same thing that I apply to sort of everything that I do. It's like the rules. I like to pick styles that have sort of already have something almost sacred about them. Because I like to push against it. Like, that shock is a really, you know, it's a very powerful style. You know, it's got this, you know,
people have memories attached to the shock.
Yeah, it means something to them. You know what I mean? And it's a code thing again, and like what it was, what it meant, what it stands for, who wore it, all of that. So that was a really good place to start. Because I like, well, if I do this, is it still a shock? If I do that, is it still a shock? Is that too much?
It's still recognisably a shock without being a shock.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, sometimes you play with stuff, you push it into too far. You're like, no, we've lost this. It's not, well, I don't know what that is anymore. It's like a Frankenstein thing. But the best thing, I guess, was when you can have that level of, you understand what it is, you know, you still still recognizable as the thing, but it's like through a new lens, but it still retains something. And like, some, you know, sometimes we get that right. When you get the balance right, it's good. I think we probably did in the shops.
Are there more? Are you doing more? I mean, I feel like people are just hungry. I mean, how many?
No.
colours that you've done already.
You've done it. What have you done? 6 colourways or something?
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's it. Unless we do a special release in, you know, 10 years. Yeah. Gold.
Keep it like 60 is a nice number.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm also intrigued by your Kendrick Lamar. Because that was quite a special one. I mean, he doesn't collaborate with anyone.
I mean, also, what a dream.
Oh, my God. I think he's like one of the most important voices.
I don't know, because I never really get gas from people. Like, you know, like, not really a fan. I never had like posters on my wall growing up. I didn't,
yeah.
You know,
I'm trying to, yeah. I suppose. I sort of got
to go to the concert and I don't think I was prepared. I just didn't really think about it. You know, I just didn't really think about it. And then he walked on stage and I lost my mind. I lost my mind because it was like,
I know.
Power.
Yeah.
Even just standing there, not even saying anything.
I know.
And then I met him backstage by Wet Side. I was like, I can't even
tell you. Could you get a word out? I would have been like,
No, I couldn't. Well, he must have just thought I was absolutely mad. He was very generous and kind and he just kept on hugging me. But it was so, such a sort of like a wonderful sort of spirit as well and like genuine person. I don't know. It was so much fun. It's not a bad job. It's all right.
I know. There are some perks. There are some perks. I'm just really happy we got to do this. I've been looking forward to it.
Thanks for having me. Lots of love.
That's it for this episode of The Run Through. We'll be back tomorrow with our final episode of the series.
The Run Through with Vogue is a production of Condé Nast. The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns, with engineering from Jake Loomis, Gabe Quiroga, and James Yost. It is mixed by Mike Kutchman. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out.